Bill Ruckelshaus, thank you so much for sitting down with me.
No, thank you for having me.
So you've received this award in good company. You're joined by Steven Spielberg, Barbara Streisand, Yogi Berra. You're clearly the best looking of that crowd.
Damnation by faint praise.
Well, so where will you display the award? This is such a huge honor. Congratulations.
Well, I've threatened my wife to wear it outside my suit coat in the daytime and inside my pajamas at night so it wouldn't hit her in the face when I turned over. I don't know what I'm going to do with the award, to be honest with you. But it really is quite an honor.
Oftentimes with big awards like this, there are political undertones, like the Nobel Peace Prize. And do you think that what kind of message do you think the president may be sending by choosing the first administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency as he's sort of on his way out of office and making a lot of big environmental moves?
Yeah, that's occurred to me that may have been part of it. My understanding of the way this process works is that there is no process, that the president gets nominations from a variety of sources and makes the choices himself. He determines himself. I would have thought there had been some sort of process that had been around for a long time that everybody went through, but no, each president's different.
So it's election season, as it seems to be all the time, and the Republican candidates have kind of had pretty strong opinions about your agency, the Environmental Protection Agency. What do you make of that, and what do you think the conversation should sound like when they talk about the environment and the EPA?
Well, what I make of it is that there is a polarization of all kinds of issues in this country today. It's too bad because issues like the environment and the biggest manifestation of it now is the climate change issue shouldn't be partisan issues, I don't think. If we have a public health problem or a public environmental problem, the science of it should be as rigorous as possible. And then the choices of what to do about it should be driven in part by science, in part by other factors that are of concern to the society. And when I was first at EPA in the early 70s, there were no partisan, these weren't partisan issues. And Republican candidates are saying we're going to abolish, day one I'm going to abolish EPA. They're not either. They can't, number one. And number two, if the issue, for instance, of what do you do about a toxic substance that is widespread in the environment that has recently been discovered as toxic, you have to balance the impact on costs and jobs and the economy on one side, public health, the environment, the need for government protection on the other. Those are very hard choices to make. You give those choices to the Congress, they'll give them back to EPA as quickly as they can get rid of them, because you no matter what you decide, you make somebody very angry. Let's argue about how to make the whole system work better, how to make the laws work better, not how to abolish them or get rid of them and then have to reenact it in the next 6 months because they won't be able to handle the circumstances that only an administrative agency can do effectively.
Now, back when the EPA was first, you know, getting up and running, the opponent was clear. I mean, pollution was much more visible. And we're talking about CO2 emissions and climate change and greenhouse gases that you can't see, you can't smell. I mean, it's a different kind of environmental fight now. How do you think we should be approaching that, or the EPA or the country should be approaching that differently?
Well, it takes more explanation for the public to understand what we're trying to do. During the late 60s and early 70s, we had smell, touch, and feel kind of pollution. I mean, you could see the air pollution on your way to work in the morning. When I first moved to Washington, the air was brown. It was mostly associated with automobile emission. The air in Los Angeles was so thick that it would look like China today. You see those pictures of the Chinese. We had rivers that caught on fire, like the one going through Cleveland, Ohio. They were so polluted. And people had all this reinforced every day on the way to work. Color television came into our homes in the middle 60s, and a blue outfall flowing into a yellow river or a yellow outfall flowing into a blue river is a lot more impressive in color than it is in black and white. And those kinds of technical changes that moved into American front living rooms had a huge impact on their impression of what was happening to the environment. Today, these problems are much less visible. I mean, literally much less visible. So it's a different kind of problem, and it doesn't, today, it doesn't galvanize as much public demand that something be done as was true back in the 1960s. EPA, in a sense, is a victim of its own success. A lot of the changes in the air and the water have been a result of a pretty vigorous agency going after polluters. Now, having done that, people think, well, everything must be okay. We don't see any fights the way we used to. So it's a harder issue today to deal with in some respects. It's not as bad. The environment's a lot better, primarily because the government responded to public demand that something be done. That's the way government's supposed to work. And it could work that way again if we'd stop all this partisan wrangling.
I'm talking with Bill Ruckelshaus, the first head of the Environmental Protection Agency and the latest recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Mr. Ruckelshaus, you're sharing this award with another pillar of Washington State, Billy Frank Jr. He was a tribal leader and an activist for Native American fishing rights. Tell me about Billy Frank Jr. You knew him. You spent some time with him.
Well, we were quite close. We did a number of things together. He reminded me, and I actually wrote this when he died, more of Nelson Mandela than anybody I've ever met. I mean, here was a man that had been arrested 50 times asserting his treaty rights and finally vindicated by the Bolt decision that was handed down in the early 70s. And he had suffered so much that you'd think he'd be very bitter about things. He'd be very angry, and you're going to show him, by God, as soon as he got out from underneath the heel of the country that was doing him in. Quite the contrary. He was open. He was as happy a man as you could be around. He never held a grudge against anybody. He was willing to forgive and forget and use the position that he held and the admiration that people had for him as leverage of getting good things done for his tribe and for other tribes in Puget Sound. He really was a remarkable human being.
What do you think he'd say if he were alive now? He died last year. What do you think he would say if he found out about receiving this medal?
Oh, he'd probably swear to begin with. He loved to swear. He didn't care who was in the audience or who was listening. And it was that no one was ever offended by it because it was just him, the way he talked. So he probably would start out with a couple of epithets. But he would have been delighted by this. I mean, and he would, you know, he would be delighted for the right reasons. The reason he would enjoy this is because he wouldn't see it necessarily as given to him for what he had done, but as an affirmation of the positions he was taking for his tribesmen and tribes throughout the region. It was the kind of person he was, and it's the reason a person like that would deserve an award like this.
You're in good company.
Oh, boy, I'll say, and it couldn't be any better than him.
Looking at Puget Sound and Washington State today, what do you see as the biggest environmental issue that we're facing here?
Well, it's called restoring the health of Puget Sound, really. Well, what does that mean? That means the sources of pollution that are going into the Sound need to be brought under control, the restoration of the habitat for salmon and other species of fish in the Sound. And, you know, it's important for people to remember the environment is not like a speed limit. It's not like telling somebody to put out a fire and then you can walk away from it because you've put it out. This is a problem you have to stay everlastingly at, because if you don't do that, it begins to deteriorate again. And in some ways it's discouraging, but in other ways it's the way we have to live going forward. We have a lot of people on this earth, and there are more and more of them moving into Puget Sound. They have an impact. Collectively, we have an impact on the environment that we inhabit with other living things. And if we don't pay enough attention to what we're doing to them, in the first place, you may forever destroy some species. And the second place, it costs a lot more the longer you wait to clean it up.
So you have a Presidential Medal of Freedom. Are you ever going to stop? Are you ever going to retire? You're at an office in your office today where I'm sitting with you. What's next?
Well, I don't want to retire. I enjoy going to the office, working on a variety of things. I'm 83 years old, so why retire? I mean, what am I going to do if I retire? Sit home and wring my hands about the environment? That won't do any good. So, no, I'm not going to retire.
Well, we're lucky to have you.
Thank you very much.